My name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 190. I'm recording it on Thursday, December 10, 2009. The peak 10 level today is 20. That's the danger zone. I'd be careful investing too heavily in stocks at today's prices. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Slow Burn. The title of the podcast is Lawsuits, Etc. Well, that's not an investing topic, Rob. Lawsuits, etc. is not an investing topic. Sharp ratio, etc. that would be an investing topic. Efficient market theory, I suppose. That goofy one you did called Woody Allen's Take on the Efficient Market Theory. I don't know if that was an investing topic or not, but lawsuits, etc. Is that an investing topic? Well, I've long intended to do a podcast. I keep a list of podcasts that I intend to record. And it's a long list, but I actually do intend to move on to some other things early in the next year. 2010 is coming up. But doing one on lawsuits, the lawsuits that I expect to bring or that others may bring as a result of the demonstrably false claims made in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies and related matters has been on my mind for some time. And I've held back because it's a strange thing to talk about. I certainly never would have imagined on the morning of May 13th, 2002 that I would ever be contemplating lawsuits against my fellow community members whom I love and revere. And now, it is sort of, you know, off the beaten track for an investing saving website, and it's a delicate subject to talk about. I don't want to make anyone even more angry than they already are. I want to pull the community together. I want to bring peace. And doesn't, you know, in ordinary circumstances, you wouldn't tend to think that talking about lawsuits would serve that purpose. And I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not going to give you any. I'm going to talk here about my thoughts and about how things should go or might go. But I certainly can't give any definitive pronouncements. I don't know for certain that there are going to be lawsuits. Theoretically, there might not be any lawsuits. But I've certainly reached a point where I think the odds are greater than 50% that there will be. And the other day, I think it was about a week ago, I think it was somebody came. I don't recall how this happened. I think I had a blog entry. I had a blog entry up. It was probably announcing a podcast. I don't know. I think it was last week. And I believe it was evidence-based investing came on and made some comments. And somehow the discussion turned to lawsuits. I don't recall at all how that happened, but it did. And I think it had been on my mind. And so I just went ahead and discussed it. And, you know, the goons got a little agitated, and then there was a thread over at the Goon Central board about it. And there's a phenomenon, I've talked about it here on the podcast before, where there are sometimes these subjects, some of them substance-related to investing, and some of them process-related. This is obviously process-related. And they've been coming up for the 7 years, for the whole 7.5 years, the whole time. Every now and then, there'll just be a point at which I'll say, you know, I've been holding back. I've not been saying this because I don't want to stir things up, but things have reached a point where I'm going to say it. And this, thus far, I've never regretted it. You know, go through some of those. It's sort of like an escalation is the way I would describe it. An escalation in my belief in posting honestly. In other words, I'm a big believer. You hear me say it all the time. We should open the internet up to honest posting. Well, how honest do you want to get, you know? I remember an early version of that. I think it was the first time. It was, the first example of that was the post I put forward on May 13, 2002. I had known from the first time I posted at Motley Fool in May of 99 that John Graney's safe withdrawal rate study got the numbers wrong. I knew that. Didn't know it with absolute certainty that, you know, I wasn't 99.99% sure as I am today, but I knew it with 90% certainty. I was fairly confident. I was pretty darn confident. And I held back. May 13th, 2002, I said the truth publicly. Do I regret it? Well, I regret a lot of what's come down the pike, for sure. I mean, I'm not going to go on and on about that aspect, but I mean, it's horrifying. How many board communities have been destroyed? I can't bear to think of it. But all of the learning experiences that we've enjoyed for the past 7 years, and I think it's easy to lose sight of this. I think it's easy to, you know, I'm in this situation where I'm doing podcasts and I'm doing articles and blog entries and all this sort of thing, calculators. And a lot of times what happens is I know this stuff like the back of my hand today. There's all sorts of investing stuff I know nothing about. Sharpe ratio, forget it. I don't know anything about it. All sorts of things. You know, don't ask me because I don't know. But when it comes to valuations and emotions, they're sort of the same thing, but different ways of attacking the same thing. Valuation/emotions. I think that's roughly 70% of the investing project. And on that topic, I believe I'm the world expert. I don't think there's anyone who can top me. I don't mean to sound like a braggart, but I have been into the belly of the beast. I have seen investor emotion up close and personal. I don't know it all. I don't claim to know it all. I learn something new every day. I struggle with it. Some of it's very hard. There's nobody else to turn to sometimes because other people don't study it. But I will stand up on the stage and discuss it with anyone alive. I'll stand up with John Bogle. I'll stand up with Robert Shiller. I'll stand up with Warren Buffett with no fear that I'll be made a fool of, because it may be that they'll know something I don't know, but I know enough that I won't be made a fool of. I can carry my weight on that subject. I am sure of it. Valuations/emotions. And that wouldn't be true. That wouldn't be true. You know, if I hadn't put that post forward, May 13th, 2002. In other words, I had a vague sense that morning. I knew that valuations matter. I knew that emotions mattered. But what I knew then compared to what I know today, I know 10 times what I knew then. And, you know, the only sad part is I haven't been able to profit from it, because really the problem is that so few people appreciate the significance of this topic, the valuation/emotion aspect, that they don't even see the benefit of me knowing it. So I have this knowledge, but it doesn't get me anywhere. But down the road, I think it's going to, because, I won't go on and on, but the economic system is going to collapse if we don't recognize it. We can't allow people to continue investing in stocks, putting their hard-earned savings into stocks and not understanding 70% of the investing project. We've got to open up the discussion of investing to the realities of investing. So that's a case where, you know, I worked up the courage to put forward that post, May 13th, 2002. Time will tell whether it ends up having been a good thing or a bad thing, but while it's been a bad thing in that it opened up Pandora's box, it unleashed the furies, you know, this anger and hate and ugliness and jealousy and all this sort of thing. But it also opened us up to some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful insights. And as I say, it's easy to lose track because some days, you know, some days I'll see something by whoever it is. You know, a lot of these experts I have a great deal of respect for, Bogle and Bernstein and all of them. And sometimes they'll say something and I look at it now and I'm sort of, it's almost, I don't know how to put this. I remember Larry Swedrow said to me one time, we were having a discussion. He says, "Rob, you're being patronizing." And I was like, "Well, Larry, I don't mean to be patronizing. The comment that I made did sound patronizing. I saw what he was saying. It's like, yeah, I know more than you, Larry, you know, and you're just going to have to accept it. On this subject, I know more than you." And he was angry. You know, "How dare you think you know more than me? I'm such an expert." And I'm like, "Sorry, Larry, but there may be things that you know inside and out that I don't know a thing about. But on this subject, I'm sorry, but You're not the expert. You just haven't dealt with it in the depth that I have. And so that sort of thing comes up all the time. And I guess what I'm saying is that's a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing. It should be a good thing for me to know things that no one else knows about investing, especially if it's 70% of what you need to know, or even 50%. And it's good for the world at large, because we need to have some experts on the valuation / emotion side of the story. We, you know, if that's the thing we don't know, if that's the thing that's sending our economy over, you know, into the abyss, well, then we sure better develop some expertise there. And I think I have. And not the easy way. I walked through fire to get there. So I think the May 13th post will end up being an historic moment in the history of investing. That was what opened up this door to all this knowledge. It opened up the door to a lot of ugliness. I don't deny it. But in the end, the ugliness gets blown away in the wind. The insights we've developed together endure forever. And then that happened again. I remember, you know, then Grainy got abusive. And then at one point, I don't know when it was. It was summer of 2002. Sometime in the summer. I remember the morning. It was a Sunday morning. I remember it being hot. And I used the word deliberate deception for the first time. I said, Grainy is engaging in deliberate deception. He'd been doing it for months. And I held back. I said, you know, I'm not going to say deliberate deception, because how are you going to patch things up after you say that? You know, you're calling the guy out on his integrity. But, you know, after he had put forward 500 deliberately deceptive posts, it was sort of a joke. You know, I said, if we don't talk about it, how are we going to ever solve it? So I said it. And again, you know, yes, it did. It did stir the hornet's nest. But we had to go there. I mean, we couldn't just keep going around in circles. And you can't get to first base in the discussions without doing something about the abusive posting. So we sort of had to go there. And that happened. Another case, I don't want to go on and on about this, but I just want to give a couple examples of why it's so important sometimes to break the ice, to say what you've been thinking and you've been afraid to say. Another big one was at the Fireboard. I believe this was after I was banned at Motley Fool. I'm not sure. Could have been before that. There was a time when I was posting at both, and then after I was banned at Motley Fool, I posted only at the Fireboard. This was at nofeeboards.com, now defunct. But there was a day when I used the phrase analytically invalid. I said the old school safe withdrawal studies, before then I had been saying they were flawed. You know, they get the numbers wrong. But I had never used the phrase analytically invalid. There's something definitive about that phrase. And I finally used it. Oh, and they went nuts. You know, they went nuts. But I knew that it was true. I mean, at this point, my knowledge was deep enough that I had no doubt that that was an accurate statement. And I felt comfortable saying it. So those are some examples. And of course, there are others, you know, along those same lines. But the point is, it's like peeling an onion. You start out, and I think all human learning is sort of like this. You start out with an inclination. You believe something, but you're not sure. And you sort of put forward a hypothesis, and then you test it, and you see what the reaction is, and then you get more comfortable with it, and then you push it to the next level, and you keep circling around. And that's what I've been doing. And so the idea of, oh, you're going to bring lawsuits against your fellow community members, well, you know, that's one that I haven't wanted to say publicly, but maybe it's better to get it out. What's the advantage of getting something like that out? Well, there's all kinds of advantages. I mean, one is it lets you think about it more clearly. When you start talking about something, this is one of the reasons I record the podcast. When you speak out loud, you learn. It's weird. You would think if you knew it, you don't have to say it. You know, but it's not. A lot of times, until you try to say it, you don't really know it. And when you turn the microphone on and you start speaking, you have an outline, you have a rough idea of what you're going to say, but you end up, things start coming to your head that you weren't expecting were going to come to your head. And so when you put the issue of lawsuits out there in the open, it sort of changes it. It changes the dynamic. Another is that people may see it, and they may suggest, you know, someone may see the podcast on lawsuits and say, hey, here's a lawyer. I have one who'll help you out, you know. So that could happen. It could help me find a lawyer. It'll take the case on contingency basis. or pro bono basis. You know, or there might be some sort of class action lawsuit, something like that. So that can help. It could serve as a warning. You know, there are a lot of people. You know, it started out, it was mainly John Graney posting abusively, and he might have been the only one, and now there might be others. You know, putting themselves at risk through their behavior. Maybe this will be a warning to some of them, so that would help people from getting hurt down the road. It might, I mean, God, it probably won't, but theoretically, the goons could look at it and say, hey, maybe we should, stop some of this, chill out. You know, that if they had any brains, that would happen. You know, I'm not going to bet $1,000 on it at this point, but you never know. You never know. So there are a lot of good things that could come from it. And there are some matters related. You know, the lawsuits don't mean only lawsuits I could bring. The other question is, it's lawsuits, etc. Well, there are lawsuits that could be brought by people who have lost money because of the reckless promotion of buy and hold. That's a public policy matter. So that doesn't even involve me. I can't bring any lawsuit because I lost money because of the promotion of buy and hold. You know, I saw through it. I mean, I never lost money because of buy and hold. So that's not my lawsuit. But it may be that there are other people who are going to be bringing such lawsuits. And so in that, you know, that respect, it is a public policy. So there's different ways of approaching it. And I think the idea here is, when I talked about it in those threads last week, I just thought, yeah, it's time to get this out in the open and throw out some ideas. Now, what kind of lawsuits are we talking about? What kind of lawsuits are going to proceed? Well, the one, I guess I need to give a little bit of the history so people have some idea what we're talking about. I don't want to go into any great detail, but I was a extremely popular poster at the Motley Fool's Retire Early Board back in 2000. Well, I started in 99, became extremely popular in 2000. And 2002 is when I put up. May 2002 is when I put up the post heard around the world that changed all of our boards forever, and possibly changed our understanding of how stock investing works forever. And so then I went. I was at one time the most loved poster on Motley Fool. After that post, I became the most hated poster on the entire internet. I think it would be fair to say, I'm going to claim that, you know, in my marketing materials. If anyone knows of anyone on the internet who's ever been more hated than Rob Bennett, I'd like to know who it is. I'm sure there are others who have been hated, but with the intensity and for the length of time, you know, the smear campaigns against me because I committed the terrible crime of reporting the safe withdrawal rate accurately. They have extended now for 7.5 years. 7.5 years, daily smear campaigns. And they've gone dozens of discussion boards, scores of blogs. I mean, you know, death threats, you know, it's everything you can imagine. I don't think anybody's going to ever top that. I really don't. I don't think anybody's ever going to top that. I think I figured out the most explosive issue you could find. I really believe that. I totally by accident. I knew that my post was going to be controversial. Please. You know, I don't want to pretend to, you know, I didn't know. But did I know the extent? No. Not by a factor of 10,000. I had no idea. I knew that people were going to be a little miffed. And I knew people were going to be excited. And there were people, you know, incredibly excited. But there were people incredibly miffed. And that's sort of what this is all about. What is the problem here? And it's something I said in a recent podcast. It's not one guy. I used to think it's just John Graney. And he's a bad actor. He certainly, you know, behave poorly, but it's not one guy. No one guy could have done this. No one guy could have done this. It's not just John Graney, okay? John Graney can quote me on that if he likes. It's not. And that's part of it. That's another one of the benefits of talking about this stuff out loud, because we're ultimately going to have to decide these matters. You see, the matters we're talking about are not matters that affect only Rob Bennett or even only our community. They affect all of, they affect the entire internet, governance on the internet. They affect investing. They affect the U.S. economic and political system. I don't know how you can state it, you know, any broader. So there are matters that we all need to be involved in. And a lot of people feel, you know, they don't want to be involved in these sorts of questions. They just say, I'd rather talk about Sharpe ratios. Well, these are the issues that matter. These are the Sharpe ratio issue, whatever it is, I presume it's been resolved successfully. So there's nothing really to talk about. But these matters, no, these are live wires. These are live wires. And they need to be dealt with. They need to be, you know, we need to exploit the good in the stuff we don't want to talk about, and we need to rein in the bad in all this stuff we don't want to talk about, and we need to untangle the good from the bad. We need to separate the two. Separate what I call the great safe withdrawal rate debate from what I call the campaign of terror against the retire early and indexing discussion board communities. Two different things. One, a very, very positive development. One, a very, very negative development. So the story is, I put up this post. I was very popular. Our board was very popular. The Retire Early board had become the most successful board in the history of the Motley Fool site. And I was the primary person who built that board. It was my post that brought a lot of people in and you know, made the board so successful. But John Graney, who was the author of the Old School Safe Withdrawal Rate Study, he was the founder. In other words, he put up the first post. John and I were friends. We had communicated together. We had worked together on different projects. We were not close friends, but we were friends. I liked John. John liked me. John praised me to the moon. He said, everybody that comes to this site should read Rob's stuff. First thing you do. I gave John's report at Soapbox. He did a report, which basically was just the content of his safe withdrawal rate study. And I gave it a 5-star review. I said, it's great. Great stuff. A great report. And I believe that to this day. I don't really regret doing that. I guess a little bit. I regret that I didn't say what I knew about the flaws in it. I think it would have been better to have done that. But I don't know. The time my focus was building up the board, and I didn't want to do anything that would cause conflict, and I really do think that the study was a significant contribution. So I can't say that I regret praising a study that I felt added a lot to our understanding of how stock investing works. And so, you know, John is the first person, you know, on the acknowledgments page of my book, he's the first person I mentioned. That doesn't mean he was the most important influence on the book. It means that he was significant. You know, I don't know how to say how you order those things, but that's what I wanted to start with, thanking people at Motley Fool, and his name is the one that comes first because he founded the board. So that's the setup. He felt that he owned some sort of right to the board. You know, he owned this board community because he put forward the first post. I disagree. There's nothing in the rules of the site that say the person who founded it has power over what people can say. Zero that says that. And I checked and I asked people at the board, does anybody here believe that's the way it should be? And virtually everybody said no. They said, that's insulting. You know, what are we, slaves? You know, he tells us what to think and what to say. No way, no how. So Motley Fool didn't say it. The board community didn't say it. But he had that idea in his head. That's clear. He had the idea in his head that because he put forward the first post, no one could ever disagree with him on an issue in which he considered a priority. He allowed disagreement on some issues, but he wouldn't allow disagreement on that issue. And it's sort of his choice. In other words, if he decides nobody may disagree, that's the end of it. And I find that idea offensive, and I find it offensive and stupid, just dumb. But it's out there. You know, people are going to have to decide. Do people think Do people think that makes sense? That somebody who puts up the first post owns the board and no one, you know. In other words, are the rules of Motley Fool applicable at that board, or are the rules of John Graney applicable at that board? Because if I had ever thought the rules of John Graney were applicable, I never would have put a post there. I mean, that would be crazy. Why would you allow some individual who you don't even know to control what you can say? I had thought Motley Fool rules applied, and Motley Fool rules said that Graney's tactics were unacceptable, and he had clicked, I accept. He had agreed to that. So, to me, it's all very simple, but others seem to have, you know, some question. I put forward a post, and the problem was John had prepared a study of safe withdrawal rates, which is a retirement planning study. That's what he did. And this was sort of his claim to fame. This was a big deal to him. And it was a good study, as I've said. I gave it 5 stars. It was a good piece of work, helpful piece of work, constructive piece of work. It was one of the things that attracted me to him right from the first day. I discovered his site and I said, wow, you know, I'm using safe withdrawal rate analysis. This guy uses it. It's like we're on the same path. Like we're thinking, it turns out we were sort of like antimatter or something, you know. It's like I'm the opposite of John Graney in every way. But I didn't know that at the time. All I saw was, a kindred spirit. But it turns out we had very different ideas. But I had no idea he would react that way. I just thought we would talk about safe withdrawal rates. And if I had something to add, he'd be happy to hear it. And if he had something to add, I'd be happy to hear it. And it would all work out. I had no idea. So anyway, he had started, you know, I had held back. Because I didn't want to, I'm basically a conflict-adverse person. One of the great ironies of this whole matter is that I hate conflict. I hate conflict, and I've spent much of my life trying to avoid it. And what sort of happened is, the problem in this case is that what I'm saying is so important, you know, that people get the numbers right when they plan their retirements, and so much in my bailiwick. In other words, this is what I do. I help people achieve financial freedom early in life. Well, you know, if you retire early, you've got to hand in a resignation from a corporate job. So I sweated that for years. I used to think, God, I don't want to get this wrong, you know. The whole reason I discovered these errors is that I studied those studies so many times because I didn't want to screw up. And so to me, this is of huge importance. The idea that we would deliberately give people wrong numbers is just so foreign to my way of thought. I can't even describe what it's like. It's the opposite of everything I stand for. I spent my whole life working up to this point where I could give good advice on how to achieve financial freedom early in life. And the discovery of the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies is my most important contribution. And to deny that, it's like to deny my whole life. It's to deny 53 years of, you know, you start out as a little boy learning how to read and write and add. And you know, you go through these challenges throughout your life. And the culmination of all that is that I was able to discover these errors in these studies that nobody else saw. And the thought that I would betray my fellow community members and tell them false numbers is just inconceivable to me. The fact that anyone would demand I do that is inconceivable. And yet, many have. Not one. Many have done this. So, anyway, that's sort of the background. And so I posted honestly. John Walter Russell did research showing that I was right very early on. The sixth day. So it was May 18th, I believe, 2002. And hundreds of community members, you know, said, this is great. This is the best topic we've ever had. But Graney organized a goon squad, and he said, I'm going to destroy, well, he didn't say it, but his intent was, you know, it was clear that his intent was, I'm going to destroy anyone who reports this. I'm just going to destroy them. Use these bully tactics I've learned, you know, how to destroy people on the internet. And he did that. And eventually I was banned at Motley Fool. You know, no reason was ever given or cited. I never had an abusive post. No responsible person says I ever did. I mean, Graney may say it, but Motley Fool never did. So then we started, a group of us started other boards. We started the Fire Board, and we started the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group Board, all this sort of thing. And Granny would find out, you know, there's ways to find out on the internet. You can enter these Google searches under somebody's name or something, or safe withdrawal rate, whatever. And he would find out, and he would send his goon squad in, and then they would destroy that board. And then we'd start a new one, he'd destroy that. It just happened over and over and over again. And it would often take a year or two of my life to build up. It's hard to build a discussion board. It takes a lot of work. It's all a question of you've got to get the fire going. And it takes a long time to get to critical mass. And we would take 2 years sometimes to get to critical mass. And then when we got to critical mass, we'd get the rug pulled out from under us. The site owner would capitulate to these threats. And the whole thing would be taken down. Happened over and over again. So strange, strange, strange. And one of the really negative dynamics here is that this is so unfortunate. And it's, you know, as I say, I don't want to make excuses for Graney or Lindauer. Mel Lindauer is the leader at the indexing boards. Graney is the leader of the retire early boards. But I don't want to make excuses. But one thing I will say in their behalf is that you know, ordinarily, a lot of these, it's really a theme of these of all our discussions, both the positive and negative side. A theme is the role of community. And when you talk about law, I mean, I have a law degree. I studied law. I never practiced law, but I studied law. I had always intended to be a journalist in the legal field. And so I wrote about tax law for many years. And then that moved me into the personal finance side of journalism. Law is an expression of community will. In other words, laws are not written by one person. Laws reflect the culture in which they are developed. And the laws in the United States have long favored free speech. And I'm a journalist. I believe in free speech. And so I have always just assumed that the law that affected me on these matters would support me, because I'm, you know, all I'm trying to do is tell people, report to people what the historical data says on these retirement numbers. And Graney doesn't want them to know, because if they know, they're not going to believe his study anymore. And I've always assumed the law is going to support you. But there's two things that I have working against me in a big way, not a little way, big way. One is the subject matter. The subject matter is investing, stock investing in particular. Excuse me. And we have just lived through the most insane bull market in the history of the United States. Okay, this can be measured. The most insane bull market prior to this time was the insane bull market of the 1920s. And bull markets always bring devastating financial losses. It's not even possible to imagine how that could not be so. And the insane bull market of the 1920s led to the Great Depression. But this time, we went to valuations far, far in excess of what we did in the 20s. So the logical conclusion is we're entering the second Great Depression in years to come. I hope that's not true. I hope it doesn't happen. And I personally believe, I may be, you know, a cockeyed optimist. I personally believe that it's possible for us to avoid the second Great Depression. But I also believe we're running out of time. I believe that we had a good chance a year ago. Now that we've wasted a year, frittered it away with nonsense, gibberish, you know, blaming the bankers and all this sort of thing, I think the odds of us avoiding the second Great Depression are not so good. But I still think it's there for us if we grabbed it. But if we don't grab it, well, I don't know. I want to be able to say that I did my best. I gave it my best shot. But one thing I very much have going against me is stock investing is an intensely emotional subject. Intensely. As I say, I think emotion is 70% of the game. And that the you know, the numbers stuff is 30%. That's my personal view. But I'm dealing with an intensely emotional subject. And of course, I'm giving a viewpoint that is not the prevailing viewpoint. The dominant model for understanding stock investing is buy and hold. And it's been the dominant model for at least 30 years. And I'm saying buy and hold is nonsense. I'm saying buy and hold is dangerous. So I'm rejecting something that millions of people believe in, and they haven't believed in it for a short amount of time. They've believed in it for decades, and they've told all their friends about it. So to accept that it's wrong would cause them feelings of shame and remorse. And their financial futures are riding on it. So we have intense, intense opposition to what I'm saying. Now, does that matter when you're asking whether somebody has the right to speak, whether free speech applies? No, theoretically, no. But in a practical sense, if someone spoke out against slavery in the days before slavery was repealed, would they be allowed to make their case? Maybe sometimes they would, and my guess is sometimes they wouldn't. My guess is there were towns where if the local newspaper put forward an editorial against slavery, there would be repercussions for that person. That maybe technically free speech applied, but in a practical real world sense, it did not. And that's the situation here. None of the people who have repressed my speech or the speech of the hundreds of people who have either agreed with me or expressed a desire that honest posting be permitted, I don't think there's anyone who has ever said, in clear, direct terms, I don't favor free speech. They all claim to favor it. But they all work overtime to threaten those who practice it on the question of the safe withdrawal rate studies. So one big thing, that I've got working against me is we're dealing with this intensely emotional subject, and investing has never been as emotional as it is today. Because buy and hold is the most emotional strategy of them all, and buy and hold has never been as popular as it is today, or at least as it has been in recent times. And while buy and hold is somewhat less popular today than it was before the crash, the desperation of the people who believe in buy and hold is probably greater today. Because if you were saying these things in the summer of 99, they certainly didn't think you were right. But they might not have cared. They were confident enough that they sort of didn't care. But today, they see it falling apart in front of their eyes. And so there's a desperate quality to the emotion. Okay. Now, if that were the only strike against me, I think we could prevail. How? No matter how strong people are on the substantive issue, no matter how emotional, it really doesn't matter. If free speech applies, there's always some people who don't go for the dominant theory. 10%. There have been people who have dismissed buy and hold going back to the first day. So if we had a communications medium that respected the rights of people to speak their sincere views, it wouldn't matter. I mean, it would matter in one sense. Many people would be afraid to speak their honest views because of the hostility that would greet them. But I've become immune to that. I don't like it. I don't like the hostility, but I've sort of become immune to it. It goes in one ear and out the other. What I'm focusing on the people who want to learn. I know that they're out there. And, my whole deal is, I post for those people. And so what would happen in ordinary circumstances is even if there were a lot of people who didn't want to hear the truth about stock investing, I would post my views. Maybe 80, 90% would just tune them out. They would just say, well, I'm not going to listen. I'm going to skip his post or I'm even going to criticize his post. But 10 or 20% would participate, and the 10% would eventually become 20, and the 20 would become 40. And eventually we would prevail because we're right. Because the historical data backs us up and logic backs us up. But we've got this second strike, and that's the internet is the internet discussion board and the internet blog are new communications mediums. So the rules that apply are not clearly written or not clearly known or clearly articulated. That's a second strike. In other words, on the internet, there's this, a lot of people talk about free speech on the internet all the time, but how many of them really mean it? My experience is most don't mean it. Most, when they use the word free speech, is what they mean is people who agree with me have free speech. People who disagree with me must be silenced. That's the common view. That's certainly Graney's view. That's certainly Mel Lindauer's view. In practice, they won't say that, but in practice, they don't want differing opinions to be voiced. And they're not alone, as I say. They're not at all alone. So we've got a two-headed dragon. You know, we've got this unclear law on the internet and confusion on what works in stock investing, and I'm battling both at the same time, and I think I could have defeated either one. But the combination has been a hard. So the question now is, okay, you know, given that that's also isn't it a little bit extreme, you know, to go to lawsuits? I mean, a lot of these people, they're people who posted on the internet. You know, some of them are your friends. John Graney is my friend. I don't care. I'm not his friend. I've said this many times. I say John Graney's my friend. He says I'm not your friend. I say fine, you're not my friend, but I'm your friend because we had good times together. I don't forget, and that's the way I feel about it. But, you know, I don't think it would be an overstatement to say he hates me with an undying passion. So, you know, you're going to sue your friend? Well, you know, if it was a question of, you know, the guy said something mean about you on the internet, I'd say no, you know. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about a situation where he has shut down. I mean, it's so incredible, but it's true, and you can check the post archives. He has shut down honest posting on investing on the internet. This is what he's done. Many people don't know it. Many people think they're having honest discussions at Bogleheads or at Vanguard Diehards or wherever else, early retirement forum. But it's not true. Once you ban new findings, you've given up the integrity of the communications medium. In other words, our knowledge of safe withdrawal rates is not the same today as it was the morning of May 13th, 2002. And yet, would somebody posting to Bogleheads know that? Would somebody posting to Early Retirement Forum know that? They're not allowed to talk about the errors in the studies. They're not allowed to talk about the retirement risk evaluator. They're not allowed to talk about our findings that, you know. So that is dishonest. It's dishonest. In other words, reality is a changing thing. When people come up with new findings, the reality changes, and that reality needs to be reflected in the discussion in order for the discussion to be honest, and it's not reflected today. And Graney didn't just say, well, you know, I'm gonna get this guy banned at Motley Fool through hook or by crook. After getting me banned at Motley Fool, he said, I'm going to get him banned everywhere on the internet. If he posts to a blog, I'm going to get him banned. I'm going to invade his own blog with abusive comments. I mean, not just Graney, but all his goon friends. I'm going to destroy his business. I'm going to go to Amazon. I'm going to talk to reporters. When reporters write positive stories about him, I'm going to go to their editors and smear him so that his editors, the editors will be afraid. You know, when people have written positive things at their websites, he goes after them. You know, he puts up smear threads at his, you know, at his discussion board so that they'll be intimidated. Now, and this has gone on for 7.5 years, and it's gone on during a time when we've had a chance to mine all of these insights. You know, we're obviously not going to persuade everyone to agree with valuation-informed indexing. That's not going to happen. But certainly we should be trying to reach as many people as we could. That's the responsible thing, and we can't do it because our ability, most people, the average person, their attitude is, I won't participate. If the discussion gets too ugly, I drop out. This is what most people do. And so most people don't know that the retirement studies are invalid. They don't know that buy and hold is dangerous. And they need to ask questions to learn, and they can't ask the questions. So, you know, it's quite a situation. Now, the primary goal is just to open up the internet to honest posting. You know, that's what it's all about. Now, if we can do that, say we eventually do that. I believe we eventually will do it. We will find a blog owner or a site owner of integrity, and that person will say, "Look, I don't know if everything Rob's saying is true or not, but I'm going to allow him to say it. And if anyone engages in abusive tactics to silence the discussion, that person's going to get the boot." So at this discussion board, there's going to be honest posting. And people will make up their own minds. They'll hear what Rob has to say. They'll hear about buy and hold. They'll make up their own minds. And that's what we want. Say that happens. Do we then need these lawsuits? Well, ultimately, the goal is not to open up honest discussion at one place. The goal is to open it up throughout the entire internet. In other words, I don't want to find some discussion board somewhere where they allow honest posting and then just drop it. I, of course, would like to have such a discussion board because it will help me learn, getting more feedback, and all those people will learn. And that's a good thing, and it will build up my site, you know, all these sorts of things. But why would we not want to take the, say we've already developed, I mean, I don't know how many insights, say 50. I mean, 50 very powerful insights, you know, all kinds of subjects. Just look at the podcast, look at the titles. About risk, about asset allocation, retirement planning. Would we not want to share these things with all of our friends at Bogleheads.org? Would we not want to share these things with all of our friends at Early Retirement Forum? Would we not want to share these things with all of our friends at Motley Fool? Would we not want to share these things with all of our friends at Vanguard Diehards? What? Would we not want to share these things with all of our friends at Get Rich Slowly blog? What are we going to do? We're going to go off in some ghetto? That doesn't make any sense. Because when we share these things, we help all the people we're sharing them with, for one thing. And two, we learn from those people because they add their life perspectives to the mix and we learn. So, this has come up, you know, from time to time. People say, well, Rob, you know, just, you know, find, I don't know. They say post at your own blog. Well, that is so stupid. What good would it do me to post at my own blog and not tell anybody about what we found? I mean, it's truly moronic. I don't know if the people saying this are serious or not. I presume they're not, but enough people say it, you sometimes wonder. But the idea is not personally for me to know the realities of stock investing. I to a large extent, I knew them. I mean, I knew the realities of safe withdrawal rates before I put up the first post. The goal is to share this. The goal is to help millions of middle-class people invest more effectively. It's not to help Rob Bennett. Helping Rob Bennett is part of it. Unless I learn, I can't share with others. But that's not the end goal. It's a community effort. So, the goal here is not to find one blog or one board. The goal is to open the entire internet. The goal, the goal is to change the history of investing. If all these things are true, if all these things stand up, if somebody finds flaws, then of course that's not true. Then we just, the history of investing stays as is. But I think it'd be fair to say that the odds of that are very, very slim at this point. We've gone 7.5 years, many highly motivated to find flaws in valuation-informed indexing or the rational investing model. No one has found anything of any consequence in that time. So the chances that that's going to happen, I think, are slim. People may find caveats. I think that could happen. People have already found caveats. People may find more. That's a positive, and that's good. But that's not going to change the fact that these ideas are going to change the history of investing. I don't mean to sound like a braggart, but it's true, isn't it? So, and our economy is now at risk, and our political system is at risk. The losses from buy and hold, you know, if you do a back of the envelope calculation, are somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 trillion. That those losses of that size are so devastating to middle class people that people are losing confidence in their political leaders. They're just angry. And it would seem to me that, you know, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, everybody should want to do something about that. Telling people how to retire 5 years sooner would do it. So the rational investing model is the answer to all our problems. But the only thing holding it up is that there are all these people who don't want to say those three magic words, I and wasn't wrong. And so does there come a point at which the only way the society can solve that problem is through the litigation process? Now, I don't know the answer. I am open to input. You know, I don't have a closed mind on it. If there are better ways to do it, I'm going to choose the better way. In other words, I don't have a bias towards litigation. I'm not going to say, "Oh, you know, I got a grudge against John Graney. I got to smash him," you know, or some sort of thing, you know, some sort of sick idea. If there are better ways to do this, I want to choose the better ways. And litigation, I mean, I have never been involved in litigation, you know, so I can't say for sure, but everything I've ever heard about it says it's a stone cold drag. It's the last thing you want to do. It's a last resort. So if there's a way to do it without litigation, and it's not hard to figure out what that would be. In other words, we start sharing these ideas. The ideas are so powerful and so positive that, we're talking about ideas that couldn't just make millions of dollars. I think they could make billions of dollars. I mean, you know, I don't need billions. You know, I need money to provide for my family. I need money to market my website. I'd like it to be the number one personal finance website on the internet. That's my goal. That's not going to take billions of dollars. So it's not hard to see. If we were to put our heads together and work constructively and positively together, how we could avoid litigation. But the trouble is, the goons are incapable of constructive thought. They're just filled with anger. They're filled with hate. And I've tried every trick in the book. You can look through the post archives. I've tried every trick in the book to calm them down, you know, to appease them, to compromise with them, to negotiate with them. Nothing leaves any impression. You know, you talk about them in friendly terms and it just makes them hate all the more. You know, I think they hate themselves. You know, they hate themselves. And so, I mean, it reminds me, there's a scene, a great movie, I thought. I'm going to read this book to my kids. I saw this movie maybe a year ago, and I read the book when I was recently at the beach for a week, Thanksgiving week. But there's a movie called The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio. And a great little story. It's a book, and then they made a movie of it. But it's about a woman. I don't know. I think she had 10 kids, maybe 8, a large number of kids. And her husband, this was some time ago. Her husband was an alcoholic, and he would drink away all the money. They had no money. They had a lot of kids, a lot of bills. And this woman was just had this wonderful, wonderful spirit. She wouldn't let life get her down, and so she would enter these contests, you know, come up with an advertising jingle for, you know, toothpaste or whatever. And she got really good at these contests, and she would win them. And every time the family was about ready to be kicked out of the house, you know, because they couldn't pay the mortgage, she'd come up with a big prize and save the day. It's amazing, amazing stuff. But anyway, there's a scene in the movie, and it's in the book as well, but you know, one time, one of her jingles is going to be on television, and the family's all gathered around to watch it, but the husband's off in a corner drinking, you know, and he's mumbling under his breath and all this sort of thing, and he turns to them at one point and says, you know, they're laughing, you know, they're laughing at the stupid jingle and all the people on television, and Now he turns and he says, he turns to the woman and his wife. You know what your problem is? You know, and they all sort of get quiet and they just look at him, you know, what he's going to tell them what her problem is. You know what your problem is? You're too damn happy. And she laughs. But man, I mean, that is the dark side of the human soul, friends and neighbors. You're too damn happy. That's your problem. I mean, you know, that's the goons. That's the goon psychology. When they think about what we've accomplished in the Retire Early and Indexing discussion boards, we're too damn productive. We're too damn good. We're too damn smart. We're too damn creative. We've come up with too much good stuff. We're too damn insightful. And they hate us. They hate us with a burning, undying passion because they feel that they're not. They feel that they're not. And, you know, we've tried. We've invited them in. We've offered, you know, we've said, get involved. We've got doing all this great work. Get your name on it. They don't want any parts of it. They want to destroy it. And if that were all it were, you know, you could just say, well, these quirky personalities, you know, this happens in the world. It's sad, but we just move on. You know, they've chosen to destroy themselves and that's their choice. And we're sorry about them, but really nothing we can do about it. But the problem is these people have been given a veto power over our discussions. The owners of the sites had essentially said, we're not going to do anything about this. If they want to destroy the community, that's okay with us. I mean, we might ban honest posters, but we're never going to ban goon posters. Never, ever. I can't ever recall a single time when a goon poster not only has not been banned, has even had a post removed. I don't think I can recall a single time. Maybe if I think, maybe there was one, but there's none that come to mind. And there have been thousands upon thousands. Death threats, ridicule, deliberate deception, word games. I mean, everything you can imagine. And none of it has ever been deleted. But one thing has been consistently deleted. Honest posting on the effect evaluations on long-term returns has been banned at, I've lost count, probably 15 places. That's where we stand. So we could walk away from it, except they have a veto power. They've never had power like this, you know, in the real world, I'm sure. They've been given a power they've never had before to destroy. It's a power to destroy. It's a negative power, but it is power. And so we're going to have to decide, you know, how to proceed. And as I say, are there going to be lawsuits? There's two kinds of lawsuits. One is a lawsuit that I could bring for defamation, for destroying my business. That's a tort, I believe. And I don't know whether intimidation, I mean, threats to kill and things like that. I don't know whether that's defamation would be the biggest thing. And destruction of business would be a big thing. And the threats of violence, possibly there'd be something there. I don't know. The lawyers would have to look at the details. But we've got this problem on the internet, and I don't want to go into it. It's boring, but I intend at some point to have a section of the website called Take Back the Internet, where we'll discuss these things. And, there is an article at the website, and I think I did a podcast recently about my email to Congressman Wolf, where I talk about the need for legislation to change the rules of the internet. Currently, the laws of the United States do not apply on the internet for practical purposes. Laws of defamation don't apply. Why? Because there's no way to enforce them. Theoretically, they apply. But if you go to a lawyer, and I've done this, if you go to a lawyer, they will say, they have two concerns. One, they don't want to take a case. You know, the lawyers would all take my case if I paid an hourly fee. But, you know, you're talking about huge fees. And the normal thing that a person does in these circumstances is the lawyer takes the case on a contingency fee basis, where the lawyer doesn't get paid until the end of the lawsuit. And if he wins the case, he gets a percentage, you know, of the whatever it brings in. And so the lawyer needs to be confident. So lawyers will take, you know, an accident case if somebody gets, you know, killed or whatever. But they want to be sure. And a lot of lawyers just don't feel confident of what's going to happen on an internet case because the internet is so new. There's not much precedent. Now, there's precedent working its way through the courts. There's a case where two women in at Yale Law School, they were being savaged, much the way I've been savaged. You know, these relentless, insane, you know, abusive attacks. With the and the goal of these was to stop these women from getting hired as lawyers. And no reason. They never did anything. But it was, you know, there are people. You see, the problem here that people have overlooked is most people are assuming that most people are normal, and they assume that others are normal. But there's a small percentage of outlier personalities, and that I think it would be fair to describe them as insane in their hate for other human beings. And we've always dealt with that by having laws that stop them, you know, from behaving this way. They can't act out in public. But on the internet, we've just said, hey, free game, you know, act out. And so you've given them this power they never possessed before. And what a mistake. So one thing is the lack of precedent. And then the second thing is Yale Law School case goes through, we will have precedent. That's working its way through the courts. Was taken pro bono by a Yale lawyer. So I believe that's going to work its way through the courts. I don't know how quickly. My guess is it will go to the Supreme Court. I don't know. That's my guess. Because this matter has to be resolved. It's just, you know, people do their business on the internet. We can't continue the situation of this insanity. But the second problem is there's this law that was passed, I think in the 90s, maybe 96, Communications Decency Act, a very ironic title. And what it basically says is, there's language, I can't quote the language, but there's language indicating that the owners of a blog or a website cannot be held liable for defamation that takes place on their site. Now, I'm sure that the intent of this, I'm certain, the intent was, you know, to protect somebody. Like, if I had somebody come to my blog and say I don't follow every comment, and some idiot puts up a defamatory comment, I shouldn't be held liable. That makes perfect sense. But it's a very different situation where you're talking about somebody's carrying on a smear campaign for 7 years, and you're aware of it. The person being defamed sends you an email and lets you know, please take care of this crazy person who is threatening to kill anybody who posts honestly on retirement at a retire early board, and the owner of the site says, oh, I'll take care of that. I'll ban the people posting honestly because there's money to be made, you know, pretending. A lot of people don't want to hear the truth about stock investing, and that's where the money is. Now, that's a very, very, very different situation. I don't think that was the intent of the law, but if you're a lawyer and you're thinking about taking the case on a contingency, that sort of thing, you know, that sort of language might make you nervous. So that's the situation. I have spoken to, you know, a handful of lawyers. I've had several say there's a good case, but I haven't had, and I've had people willing to take it if I pay, you know, hourly fee, but I've not had anyone willing to take it on a contingency. And it's there's zero chance of this going forward except on contingency. I think the best bet is to have it go forward as a public policy matter. And is it called Electronic Freedom Foundation? There's a group on the internet that takes these cases, you know, I guess pro bono. And I contacted them and they weren't willing to take it. And I can't explain why. The reasoning makes no sense to me. It's some sort of libertarian argument that total freedom should be permitted, and so death threats are fine. Nothing, you know, it's up to the site owner whether death threats are good or not. Now, in a theoretical sense, I could agree with that. In other words, if Motley Fool had language saying death threats are fine here, we have no problem, then I'd say yes, it's up to them. But the trouble is, I spent years of my life building up their site and creating an income producer for them with the understanding that they did not tolerate death threats because that's what they say in their published rules. I feel that was essentially a contract, and I put my confidence that they would honor their word. So I see it differently. But, you know, the reality is at least the Electronic Frontier Foundation was not willing to take the case. So perhaps there'll be some other group that will. But if this litigation were to move forward, it would do all sorts of things. It would possibly change the rules of how businesses conduct on the internet. It would put blog owners and site owners at some potential risk, you know? In other words, there'd be responsibility. You own a blog, you've got a responsibility. You know, to be somewhat reasonable. I don't want to make the responsibility so tough that people are afraid to put up a blog, but I do think if you have a blog and you have a guy that's been running a smear campaign for 7 years and threatening to kill anybody who posts honestly on retirement, yes, you should be held, I say you should be held liable. If you allow that individual to use your site to spread defamation, that's my opinion, and I'll pursue it. I'm happy to pursue that. To the extent I can, you know, in practical terms. So it can, potentially changes the history of the internet by changing the dynamics, by allowing people who want to make honest and sincere posts, you know, giving them a little bit of power to deal with these thugs, these internet predators that can't tolerate people expressing different viewpoints. But the more important thing, you know, as if that weren't important enough, the more important thing is it would change the history of investing. Because you see, you have to listen to the other podcast to know all what's going on here. But basically, a mistake was made by the academics, you know, a long time ago, 30 years ago. And that was picked up, you know, by the promoters of buy and hold. I don't believe knowingly so. But they have not wanted to change the mistake because the buy and hold model that they developed in accord with that mistake has brought in hundreds of millions of dollars to the stock selling industry, and they don't want to change. They're aware there are problems, but they don't want to change. And so they don't look at the problems. They don't know how great the problems are. If we allow honest posting on the internet, all this changes, because if we had honest posting at Bogleheads, you know, John Bogle's there at the annual meetings. We just ask him a question. John, look at these safe withdrawal rate studies. Shouldn't they get fixed? If their safe withdrawal rate studies get fixed, buy and hold collapses. You know, the buy and hold is responsible for those millions of failed retirements. So, this would break the fever. The internet offers us this great potential to change, you know, in a very positive way. But unless reasonable site administration rules are enforced, you know, it has the potential to generate all this ugliness. Because what's, you know, I've talked about it before, this, it's a powerful communications medium, and there's a record kept of all the comments. And when there's a record kept, there are going to be people that don't want others to see that record. They're very, very, very much not going to want to see that. But I question whether the current state of play can continue forever, because, you know, stock prices are not going to remain where they are. If what has always happened in the past happens again this time, we're going to see another stock crash of, say, roughly 70%. And that's going to leave a lot of angry middle-class investors, and they're going to go looking for, you know, what happened to all my retirement money? And the answers available on the internet in post archives at scores of boards and blogs and linkable. And it's not opinion. It's mathematical calculations. These retirement studies are mathematical calculations. So I don't see this as a tenable long-term, you know, proposition, that things would just stay as they are. I don't want to do is to cause so much anger. You know, I have a podcast called The Good Populism, The Bad Populism. I want people to become upset enough that we take action. In other words, I want to overcome this feeling of lethargy, this feeling of inertia. I want action, because the current state of play is frighteningly dangerous. But I don't want people to become so angry that they're lashing out and, you know, filing lawsuits just to hurt people and all this sort of thing, you know, with emotion. So what I'm looking for is that middle road. And ultimately, this is my vision. My purpose in any litigation I brought, if I bring it, would be to get on the internet side. I would want to get responsible people together. So that we all sort of had a discussion and we said, okay, what should the rules of the internet be? We never thought about it when we adopted this idiotic Communication Decency Act. what should the rules be? You know, the people who work on the internet, the people who have experience, what do they think? And the people who contribute, what do they think? You know, what's the right balance? You know, let's find the right balance, and maybe we use the litigation as a way, as a wedge, you know, to get the discussion started. What we are dealing with here is community. Community. It's all about community. Do we as a community want to know the realities of stock investing? I think we do. I think we have a goon side to us. Each and every one of us does. And, you know, there's all sorts of personalities in a community, and a small percentage of us are willing to engage in the sort of tactics that the goon posters have engaged in. That's always going to be true. And as a community, we need to rein in the negativity. We need to say, okay, you know, we want the goons contributing. Some of them are smart people. We want their thoughts. We want their help. But we don't want them making death threats. You know, we don't want them destroying boards. We don't want them engaging in smear campaigns. You know, how do we achieve that goal? And we want, on the substance side, we want the case for buy and hold to be made. We want the advocates of valuation-informed indexing to be, held to the fire, you know? We want to be kept honest. So we don't want to say everybody has to agree with this, but we want the discussion to be civil and reasoned. Otherwise, it won't be productive. So we need to, it should be so easy. You know, if the rules had been followed, all this would have been true from the first day. The trouble is the rules have not been followed, and the goons have taken it into this extreme, strange world where the only way, it may be that the only way for the rationals or the normals, whatever you want to call them, 80%, 90% of our community, the only way for us to ever gain a foothold and gain the ability to the book is called Investing for Humans. The only way we can gain the ability to make investing a subject fit for humans again, which integrity is part of the human experience. Honesty is part of the human experience. Intelligence is part of the human experience. You know, humans are not goons. We have goonishness within us, but no, we're not goons. It may be the only way we can retrieve our integrity and our intelligence is through the legal process. Now, there's a reason why we have a legal process in the United States, but if we can do it without the legal process, I think that's the better route. But in an earlier time, I would have said, it's unlikely we're going to go the legal process. Maybe we'll have to, but it's unlikely. Today, I would say, I think it's better than 50%. But prove me wrong, goons. You know, I'd love to be proven wrong. So we will see. We will see. And I imagine we'll discuss the question again. And I hope that if people have constructive thoughts, they'll share them with me because, you know, that's how I learn. I'm one person with one set of life experiences, and I want to do what's right for the community. I want to do what's right for my family, too. I don't want to just do what's right for the community. I have obligations, responsibilities to my family and to myself. But I do want to do what's right for the community. And I want to do what's right not just for the retire early and indexing community. I want to do what's right for the bigger community, you know, the U.S. economic and political system, to put it in global terms. And I want... And the stock selling industry. You know, I'm always talking about the stock selling industry. Well, there's a lot of good done in the stock selling industry. So I'd like to have all those people, you know, working with us. And if we get those people working with us, boy, I just think the opportunities here are very appealing indeed. So I'd like to see the focus shift from negativity to the positive side, to shift from the campaign of terror to the great safe withdrawal rate debate. And the question is how to do that. And in ordinary circumstances, the idea that litigation would help, I would say, would be insane. In these circumstances, it appears that there may not be many other options. The level of negative emotion is so great. You know, it's sort of like that alcoholic story. You know, when the alcoholic gets to a point where he's so filled with hate that he would turn to his spouse and say, you know what your problem is. You know, you're too damn happy. You know, at that point, taking him, you know, trying to have a talk with him is not going to solve the problem. It may be that you need a restraining order, you know? In other words, there's a point at which the hate is just so great. And one of the things we've done to the goons as a community, we should be ashamed. We have let their hate grow. You see, there was a certain amount of anger that Graney and the others felt when we talked, you know, when we got excited about our safe withdrawal rate findings. He didn't like it. But I think what's happened is because he has posted dishonestly and abusively and shamefully, he now has to look, you know, he has to look at what he's done. He's done harm to so many community members. He's destroyed entire boards. Entire boards don't exist because of the campaign of terror. Blogs that have compromised themselves. He's got to live with that. No one should have to live with that, in my opinion. No one should have to live with that. In a healthy community, no one could live with that. Because when he first threatened physical violence, Motley Fool should have just taken him off the board. And then it's all gone. And then 3 months, you know, maybe he calms down. 3 months later, he comes back under a different screen name. Nobody even knows who it is. And there's no problem. You know? That's my view of how you solve these things. Weakness up front to a bully is destructive. Weakness exacerbates the problem. And that's what's happened here. Weakness has exacerbated the problem. The site owners need to show strength, not weakness. They've been showing weakness. What you need to do is right up front say, hey, I've got responsibilities. I'm going to honor them. And like to have your contribution, but if you can't abide by the norms of this community, sorry, but we don't need the business that bad. That's how I would play it. That's how I try to play it at my blog. That's how I advocate that other blogs play it and websites play it. And again, I hope if anyone has thoughts on how to bring the whole community together in a positive spirit to take advantage of all these wonderful insights, which we all should be dancing in the streets about, please share them with me. You know, I have my set of life experiences. I'm doing the best I can, but I am one person, and no one knows it all. And I'm awfully close to all this, you know? So help, please, if you can. I can use help. That's my take on the lawsuit question as of today, December 10th, 2009. Hope it makes some sense. If you have questions, please let me know. Good luck with your investing strategies. Good luck with your litigation strategies. I don't know. I think at root it is an investing question because it's a question of what we can talk about. And what's holding back our knowledge of investing today is that all of the most important questions of investing have been taken off the table for us. And the idea of this litigation, if it goes forward, would be to open up the forbidden continent, open up the 70% of investing that today there's a social taboo that prevents us from talking about it. Open that up. Reasoned, warm, friendly discussion and consideration and analysis. So that's the goal. So it is ultimately an investing question, I believe. Good luck with your investing strategies.